Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Well, here's the thing. You're only as good as your last performance. So our guys played as good as a game as they could have possibly played for that weekend. I thought the preparation was much better. The focus was better. I thought guys had a plan and they went out and executed their plan because of all the little things that we talked about. Just having the right attitude and that determined mindset to take that field and go out and play up to the level of expectations that we expect them to play. But now it's about putting consistent behavior on tape. Now we're faced with another challenge. Now we got to go to Denver and play against a young up-and-coming defensive line group that's playing some pretty good ball up front. And one thing that our guys got to do is just make sure that, hey, you know, last week was last week. What we did is gone. Now it's time to flip the page and move on to the next chapter.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's Friday, October 23rd, 2020, Red Friday, Chiefs Broncos on Sunday. Let's talk some more football with Stan Weber, who joins us every Friday. Good morning, Stan. How are you?
I'm good, Stephen. How are you today?
Doing good. That was Eric Bieniemy talking about the offensive line. And let's start with Eric Bieniemy, because there was a clip from his press conference yesterday that the Chiefs Twitter account put out there, and it just says, "Preach it, EB." And he's talking about players putting the team first and not worrying about the numbers. And it's about a minute clip. And, I mean, I saw Mahomes and Kelce and Tyreek Hill, a handful of the Chiefs' most prominent players retweet this and either talk about how much they love playing for Eric Bieniemy or just showing support for Eric Bieniemy. And then, you know, everyone from Lewis Riddick and several people in the national media. I saw Doug Farrar tweet out, "Stop hiring people like Adam Gase and start hiring coaches like this." And Lewis Riddick tweeted support. So it was almost like an organized effort once this clip went viral to remind people that Eric Bieniemy should be a head coach in the NFL. And I'm just curious, and people were tweeting about how much, this is a great example of the personality of Eric Bieniemy and who he is and why he should be a head coach. Let's play this, and I just went from a football perspective. Stan Weber, your thoughts on this clip that made its way around NFL Twitter yesterday from Eric Bieniemy. Jake, play it.
Sometimes professional sports have a tendency to think that it's all about the numbers and the egos, and sometimes I think people forget that we play a team game. This is what has made us special. Our guys are going to do whatever is needed to go out and win. Because when it's all said and done with, we talk about this each and every week. It's not about the numbers. Okay? It's about the alphabets. And the only two alphabets that matter in this industry is a W and an L. Whatever we have to do to get that W, that's all what matters. And then you know what? We're going to come back, put a game plan together for the following week, and we're going to get it going and get ready to go. Yes, ideally we want all of our players to have all the success that they can. But we do know this. If we can do this together and do it for one another and do it the right way, okay, it'll give us a chance to have a chance to go out and pursue the goals that we want to pursue. Sometimes
That was Eric Bieniemy yesterday, and again, a lot of his players retweeting that and just showing their support for Eric Bieniemy as the coach that they love playing for, and then a lot of the national NFL media retweeting that and reminding people that this is the guy that should be number one on everyone's list as far as head coaching vacancies. I mean, it's a done deal. He's going to be a head coach. We just don't know where, but your thoughts on Eric Bieniemy and just maybe a little window into why players love him.
Well, he's played. He has a passion about it. He understands the effort it takes to be on the field. and that it's not just how they draw things up, it's how you play with emotion, just like the Chiefs' offensive line coming off the ball. Did you expect that group of guys to maul the Buffalo Bills? But if you can get a burr underneath your saddle, get fired up, and hit some people, your team looks very, very good. And so I think he understands those kind of things. Anytime you're an Andy Reid assistant, he does a great job of teaching them what they need to know to go to the next level, what kind of things they're going to experience when they get the head person's role. He's at a high level where they care about winning. I had this conversation yesterday with a group of people, and I said, the thing in the NFL, we were trying to list who we thought the best quarterbacks were. And then, you know, we'd meander back a little bit and use examples. And I said, well, let's just put it this way. In the NFL, when you get paid as much as you do, and you're so likely on most teams in the NFL to be between a 7-9 and 9-7 record, I don't think the quarterbacks take responsibility that record is their record. They're like, I'll do my best. I know it's going to be a close game at the end, and my team might be 7-9, 9-7. It's not up to me. It's up to the way the ball bounces, injuries, and those kind of things. And I'm going to go shake the hands of the other quarterback with my cap on. You know, I'm going to have my baseball cap on because that's what quarterbacks do. They're an entity all the time. We'll say, hey, see you at next year's golf tournament, you know, with the other quarterback. Where you think about the old days, you went and you didn't want to shake that guy's hand because you wanted to beat him so bad. I said, if you got someone who cares about winning still, with all the money they're getting and the way it's rolling in the National Football League, if you have that burning desire, you're going to find the most successful guys. How does Tom Brady still have a burning desire to win? And I think that is true of Eric Bieniemy. He's not just going through the motions and saying, I'm an offensive coordinator, now I want to be a head coach, I want to run an organization, and I'm going to make a lot of money, forever be known as a head coach in the National Football League, an amazing accomplishment. No, that's not what he's thinking about. What did he say? I don't care about the numbers. I care about winning. So to me, it's the same discussion I had yesterday. If you can keep the passion when you're in this industry to not just accept we win some, we lose some, hope we're 10-6 and go to the playoffs instead of 8-8 and don't and all those kind of things, that's very valuable. But I don't think there's very much of it in the NFL, and that's where he can distinguish himself. Eric Bieniemy cares about winning. He pushes the buttons of the players and says, you know, let's go. So I think that's valuable.
We have Stan Weber in studio. Nate, any comments on that clip from Eric Bieniemy?
It gets you excited. I mean, I think you can see the way that his players respond to it, too. And I was actually listening to an interview with a coach in a sport that'll cause an alarm to go off if I say
it. Let's do it. Say it. Come on.
There's
a football Friday. You take football. Let's go.
There's the greatest American to ever coach soccer in Europe is a young guy named Jesse Marsh, and he did an interview the other day, and he said if you're a coach out there and you want to coach, you should be coaching not because you want to drop X's and O's and because you think you can outsmart somebody on the field. You should be coaching because you want to have the ability to impact the lives of a group of people and help them grow as human beings and become more competitive and become more successful and learn how to connect on an inspirational level with the large group of people trying to work together to make something happen. And I just thought, bam, that's why Dick Vermeil could go coach swimming and diving to a state championship in Napa when he was the high school coach there, even though he'd never been a swimmer or a diver in his life. Because that part, yeah, like when you get to the NFL level, you have to have it all. I think if you're going to be that elite of a coach, you've got to be a good tactician like Andy Reid is, but you also have to know how to push buttons and how to connect with human beings the way Andy Reid does. And I think we at least know that part of Eric Bieniemy is spot on.
That was Eric Bieniemy again, and you can follow me at SSJWHB. I retweeted a bunch of comments about Eric Bieniemy's comments yesterday at his weekly media opportunity. Let's take a break. We've got Stan Weber to talk about the NFL, the Chiefs and Broncos, and some big games in the Big 12 and the SEC this weekend. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Por tierra otra vez, pero el engaño es con Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones se quiere ir, se puede ir y se fue. No, el balón se cayó, se tropezó, vio la zona festiva y estaba celebrando.
That's how the call of that historic run by Daniel Jones sounded in Spanish. So hope you enjoyed that. Again, best run I've ever seen in NFL history from Daniel Jones last night. You missed it? Shame on you. Go look it up on Twitter. We've got Stan Weber in studio with us. Stan, did you see that run? Did you marvel at that run the way we did?
Well, I did not get to see the run as marveled. I saw the run as his face. They had a close-up of his face while he's running, and I realized that he didn't get all the way to the end zone. But, no, I've not seen it. I thought he probably just got caught from behind, and I know they scored a touchdown on the drive. So I was watching
– show it to Stan. Let's get Stan's
– I was watching
Stan's
it,
live reaction.
I was watching three things at once and listening to the volume of non-football, so that was kind of hard. Oh, and I was also working on the game for Saturday.
But this is better for us.
I haven't seen this run yet.
Oh, boy. Right. It's so good.
Stan, call it for us. What do you see here?
Hang on a second.
I don't see anything yet. I'm sorry.
Well, come on, Nate.
I'm sorry.
It used to be like five TVs on, and today there's one.
How about this? Stan and Nate and Stan call this game as play-by-play man and color commentator.
He one touches it over to the left. He heads it to the right.
Okay, here you go, Stan. All right, fakes the handoff. He rolls to his right, and there's an opening down the right-hand side. He's at the 50. He's got no one in front of him. He's at the 20 and stumbles down at the 10.
Yeah, he started leaning, too. Yeah. You could tell he was not going to make it.
He
made 15 yards after he was dying.
Yeah, that's almost like yards after contact. You know, yards after he lost his footing, he still got another 15. I like Stan. Oh. See, Stan's positive. Stan looks at it as a positive, says, hey, he still got another 15 yards even though he'd lost his balance.
Yeah. I wonder what he was going through his mind.
All been there.
As someone that has fallen many, many times in my life, as Jake knows, It's those falls where it happens like in slow motion almost, where you know you're falling down the stairs, you're grabbing for things, you can't stop the momentum, and you're just trying to brace for the impact. And like you said, Stan, he knew for at least 15 yards he was not going to make it. He was going to fall down. But
he was even lisping to the right like a ship,
right?
But he didn't fall on his face. He was like, whoa,
right.
Boom.
He was doing whatever he could to try to regain his balance.
I was actually glad for him that they scored a touchdown there, because then he can walk away and laugh at that, you know, as opposed
to... No one was happier for the touchdown than him. And no one's sadder than Jake.
Yeah,
I wanted an absolute failure.
You lost 22 to 21. It's because you cost your team 4 points on a wide open run.
Yes.
Do you think New York could have some fun with that today?
You think I could have fun with that today?
I'll bet you New York still is. I'm at the limit.
They're still finding a way to have some fun with
How far down is he on the back page of that paper? Is
the New York
Post?
He's still falling.
is he like 75% of the way down listening to the right, or is he just starting to fall?
Oh, I'll tell you what, the thing that made me laugh the most, I retweeted, you can check out my Twitter account, at SSJWHB, somebody put together a special win probability as that run went along for the Giants. Look at that, Nate. You will laugh out loud at that. Now, Stan, let's touch on the Chiefs and Broncos here, and I want to play a clip or two for you. First, let's hear from Denver's quarterback, Kansas City Lee Summit native Drew Lock, who came back from injury last week, did not look good against New England, but the team still won. Drew Lock was asked what he learned from the game at Arrowhead last year that could help him in this game against Kansas City.
Yeah, well, I found out I can still throw the football in snow, so that was a big first one for me. Found out a lot about just who their players are on defense. It's always nice to be able to play that team. Well, this would be my first time, actually, but playing a team that you've already played, to where you know those guys, you know how they move, you kind of know how they think. I've seen Frank Clark rush the passer a couple times in that game. I've seen Chris Jones rush the passer a couple times that game. It's just you know what to be aware of. You got a good idea on who you think they are. Now they could come out and throw something completely different at us. But it's comfortable feeling to know that you've played this team before and you know what to kind of expect.
We'll play some more from Drew Lock and get Stan's reaction after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Oh, without a doubt. It's apparent. It's been said. Shoot, I probably had it told to me 3 or 4 times today, and we don't even get to be around each other. You know, we're doing all the virtual stuff. You hear it through virtual meetings, and it's being said. Be nice to maybe snap that streak, but it's definitely, I'll say it's definitely a known thing, and we're excited about giving that opportunity to be able to stop that.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. That was Drew Locke when asked about the losing streak right now that Denver has against the Kansas City Chiefs, and if they are aware, and do they talk about the fact that the, boy, isn't this wonderful to say, that the Broncos have lost 9 in a row to the Chiefs. But the Raiders, they erased a losing streak to the Chiefs. How powerful is that when you've got, I mean, you guys will experience that for the Sunflower Showdown when Kansas has to get over that mental hurdle that they have against Kansas State. For the Broncos, of course they're aware of it. Stan, 9 in a row, they know. They know who runs the AFC West. And so how big of a hurdle is that for them to try to get over, much less beating the Chiefs physically, mentally? That's a tough hill to climb for them.
No doubt about it. The mental side of it matters, and that's why you love winning division games. Not only does it put you to the top of the division, which automatically gets you a home game no matter what your record is, you play more games against your division team, so you're always going to have a better record if you can control the division. But just the psychological part of it, that's why at any point, even if you're a 13-3 team, you don't want to lose your division games. You want to continue to roll up wins and make them understand that, yes, NFL games are close, but when you get down to the end, just like the Eagles and Giants last night, most NFL games are close. It's just who's stronger mentally at the end, not just physically, but who believes they're going to win and who's going, uh-oh, I think we're going to lose. And it totally gets into your mind when you say something bad's going to happen. It always happens when we're playing the Chiefs. You remember being a Chiefs fan, even if you're not a player. You remember when John Elway walked out with 2 minutes left in the game, and no matter how bad he'd played all game, you knew he's going to drive down the field and score a touchdown, and the Chiefs are going to be in trouble. You saw it over and over and over again. Not so much with Peyton Manning, because he usually had the game under control, but John Elway many times played against very good Chiefs teams, and they were in trouble until about 4 or 5 minutes left, and he went and won the game. So that's the kind of thing where the Chiefs know that they have the upper hand. It's important.
And now they feel that way about Patrick Mahomes when he walks on the field. They know that they are screwed. We will take a break. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's a Red Friday, October 23rd, 2020. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jake Gutierrez. We have Stan Weber in studio. Stan, we will get back to the Chiefs at 7:30. Let's talk about some big games in college football. We got three we're going to look at, and I want to get your thoughts about the matchups. Let's start with Mizzou. This is, man, everyone I've asked about this being a big game has kind of downplayed it. I think it's a really big game because Kentucky was one of the big problems, a thorn in the side of Barry Odom that really, I think, got him in trouble with the fans, that he couldn't beat Kentucky. The Tigers have lost 5 in a row to Kentucky, and a couple of those have been gut-wrenching last-second losses that, I mean, the 15-14 loss a couple of years ago when it looked like Mizzou stopped them on fourth down the way they stopped LSU to end the game, but then there was a penalty, offensive or pass interference when it should have been offensive pass interference, and then one more down with no time on the clock, and Kentucky scores the game-winning touchdown. That was awful. And so now, because the schedule's readjusted and bouncing around, we get Kentucky at Mizzou at 3 o'clock on SEC Network. Last time I checked, Kentucky was a 5.5-point favorite. This has been challenging for the coaching staff, though, Stan, because since their last game, they began to prepare for Vanderbilt, and then that was canceled. Then they thought their next game would be at Florida, and then that was moved. And so this is the third team they've had to prepare for since their last win over LSU. Boy, that's something probably that coaching staff has never had to do before.
Yes, and I even feel for all the fans from Missouri. I mean, this will be the second weekend already in this COVID-affected season where Mizzou has a home game, and you wouldn't have been able to plan on them being at home. LSU, when they rolled in, it got changed right at the end of the week. You thought you were going to be on the road. This week, Mizzou fans thought they were going to be on the road at Florida, and now suddenly you have a home game. So everyone's having to adjust, and the coaching staff is very unique to try to prepare for this game and what players are available, and all those things are interesting. I just keep going back to, not only is it a giant historical game you'll talk about for a long, long time, that Missouri beat the defending national champions, LSU, with the freshman quarterback, Bazelak, coming in and doing the job. That was a great day for Missouri football. But just think about this. With all that's happened since, and you didn't get a chance to beat up on Vanderbilt, what would it be like if they would have lost to LSU? You know, they were the underdog. If they would have lost that game or not held up at the goal line, you'd be sitting on no wins, and you keep wondering who you're going to play. And when you've got an all-SEC schedule, it's very unlikely they're going to roll in an easy team that you can pound on. There really is only one, Vanderbilt, and they pulled that game away from you. And you had last week on College Game Day, 9 o'clock tomorrow. Danny and I will start with College Game Day. We're only on for half hour tomorrow. But we were talking last week, well, good thing Mizzou beat LSU. It's sad they don't get to play Vanderbilt, but you got to get ready to roll, get some time to prepare. It's going to be tough. They're going on the road to Florida. Well, already less than a week later, totally wrong. Nope. They got a home game instead against Kentucky. But, Stephen, I don't know who you're tracking and where the people are coming from who don't think this is a big game. I just think it's a giant game. And if the Big Ten wasn't being welcomed back into college football this weekend, that's the talk of the town, starting with Illinois and Wisconsin tonight. And then tomorrow, Nebraska, congratulations, Nebraska fans. You get back in the game. I'm excited. You play at Ohio State, Michigan, Minnesota. I mean, these are the games we're going to talk about in addition to everything else that's going on. But because we're focused so much on the Big Ten, a game like Kentucky at Missouri just gets swept underneath the rug on a national basis. But, Stephen, I don't think that way at all, and I'm surprised to hear anybody would. I don't even know what premise they are talking about. Kentucky's a legitimate team with Mark Stoops. Not only do you have the history of losing to Kentucky and it being heartbreaking and you want to get over the hump as a Mizzou fan, forget that. Do you realize Tennessee's good? And Tennessee really attacked Missouri and did a good job and beat them? And Kentucky went to Knoxville and controlled the game and was the better team and held Tennessee to 7 points. This is a very good team that Kentucky's bringing in. They do something different than everybody else. They play defense, which will make it a real exciting game. Yet, I don't see any reason why Missouri can't stand up to them. Will Bazelak be able to produce the same way? Will the offense be able to move the ball and stay away from mistakes? You know, they made mistakes against LSU. This is a highly intriguing game. I mean, this is a ton of fun. It's not just because I live here that I'd be excited about this game. I could, because I kind of watch too much football, but I could live in Arizona and go, this, for the middle of the pack type of game in the SEC, what a difference it makes if you beat Kentucky. How about if you're a Missouri fan, Stephen, and you go, we just beat LSU, and now we just beat Kentucky. I mean, what kind of roll are you on? This is a giant game against a very good team.
That'd be huge for Eli Drinkwitz, just with Mizzou fans, getting points with Mizzou fans, because, like I said, they've lost five in a row to Kentucky. And for me, the most interesting matchup to watch is going to be, like you said, Connor Bazelak now. Instead of sneaking up on people, he was the Davey O'Brien Award winner for best performance from a quarterback nationally 2 weeks ago. All the spotlights on him. He was on Paul Feinbaum's show, and now everyone's expecting him to be good. He kind of snuck up on him in the LSU game if you weren't already a Mizzou fan and didn't already know about him. And so him going up against, like you said, a really good Kentucky defense that is playing well after a rough start to the season. I mean, back-to-back games where, like I said, they play Mississippi State, they win 24-2. They play at Tennessee, they win 34-7. Let's hear from Mark Stoops, and he was asked about his defense facing Connor Bazelak.
You certainly could see him going in and giving them a spark and running their offense and being very efficient. Had a very, very good game in his first start, and I'm sure he's excited about that, and I'm sure Eli is as well. And it gives them an opportunity to do what they want to do. And I think there's no denying that Coach is a very creative offensively, and Connor looked very impressive. He's a great young man, and I'm sure he'll have a great career there.
And so that's the question I had for you. He's going to go up against a really, really good defense, and you could tell me what you think of Mark Stoops and the job he's done at Kentucky. But with Bazelak, it is different when you're not getting all that hype and then you have that breakout game against LSU. Now, for 2 weeks, everyone's been talking about who with Mizzou football? Connor Bazelak. And so now there's even a bigger light on him, and now he's expected to do well. That's a challenge for any young quarterback, especially a redshirt freshman, not only to play well, but then deal with the expectations when everyone's watching you now.
Perfectly said, Stephen. You really have gotten into the psychology of the athlete, especially the quarterback. You know, before we turn into the challenges, we must put the headline in place and say, isn't it great that he showed he could play at that level? I mean, there's no negativity to the fact that he played the way he did against LSU. The fact that a young quarterback who wasn't even a guaranteed starter was in a position of fighting for the job or working with Sean Robinson, stepped up, led a win over LSU, threw the ball well, looked the part. Those are all positives. But to do it week after week after week is a whole other challenge. So let's start with the headlines. Isn't it great that he has that potential and he is unlimited how good he could be? And he might be great every week. But only Patrick Mahomes has had a magical run where it just seems like the ball bounces his way when he fumbles. It just everything goes right. It doesn't normally go that way. And you're exactly right. It's very hard when you walk around campus and everyone acts like it's easy. Hey, I saw you on Paul Feinbaum. You know, can't wait for you to throw for 400 yards against Kentucky. And then you go to bed at night and go, you know, how much different are the expectations today than 3 weeks ago? And I'm still the same guy with the same toothbrush. I don't see that much difference. You know, this is not easy for me. But everyone on campus, they're sold, right? They're not worried about him playing well. They think they found their quarterback. The defense now looks at every aspect of your game, and they're going to probe and try to find your weaknesses. Baseball is the easiest one to think about. You guys know the story. You go up to the plate, you hit the ball as a rookie, and suddenly they look for the hole. And if anybody finds it, if you don't like the curveball, guess what the pitchers are going to throw to you? They're all going to throw you the curveball and make you hit the pitch you don't want. So you're right on target, Stephen. When my first start was against number one Nebraska, and I was Big Eight Player of the Week. You know, just playing out of my mind. But I couldn't replicate that in week 2, 3, 4, 5. If I would have been, I would have been first team all conference. Instead, I was just a dud quarterback, you know, just out there playing. But not that he's in that same problem area, because anytime you show, you know, Bill Snyder said one of the great things to his players: if I've seen you do it once, why can't I expect you and help you do it all the time? So this is a positive statement I'm saying about Connor Bazelak. But Stephen, you said it well. Kentucky's going to be geared up to play him, not just Missouri generically. They're ready to play Missouri with him at the helm, and it's hard when everyone around you, your parents and everybody, it seems like they're really being nice to you because they have confidence in you, but I'm telling you guys, the psychology is, I got a lot to live up to, and I'm not sure I can produce at that level. And there's a lot of pressure, and it's one thing playing LSU with nothing to lose, right? If they'd have lost against LSU, no one would have been mad at Connor Bazelak. If they lose to Kentucky, he's not going to sleep well that night, and that makes him nervous. So we'll see how he handles this, but you got to put... Chris Kleiman says you got to put great days back to back to back to back. And that's the same way as a quarterback in games. So I can't wait to see Connor Bazelak. I feel sorry for him that he has this kind of pressure. Like, you got to go perform at a high level and go beat Kentucky. It's not easy to beat Kentucky. So I hope we give him a little bit of room to breathe and make some mistakes. And it's up to the defense to beat Kentucky's offense. That's where you go win the game. Kentucky's offense isn't that good. Missouri defense, go win it for him and let him find his way in the game. Protect the freshman quarterback.
Quarterback Stan Weber of Kansas State was named the Big Eight's Offensive Player of the Week Monday on the strength of his 255 yards of total offense in his first collegiate start against number one Nebraska. Weber, a junior, rushed 24 times for 113 yards and one touchdown Saturday and completed 12 of 27 passes for 142 yards and another score. Stan, I've got all the numbers here.
We didn't know how to pass well then, you know.
Yeah. Different time.
The key thing is Nebraska was a powerhouse, not a 26-point underdog to Ohio State.
That was a different...
They were number one in the... Let's put this in perspective.
Hold on here.
It's like Alabama. Playing Nebraska was like playing Alabama now.
Yep.
And we were within 8 points, because I'm back into the winning is what I'm worried about, not the numbers, right? We can talk about the numbers later because I'm old now.
Letters,
I understand the numbers. The 113
letters.
Yards rushing.
The alphabet.
Yeah, they're right. Eric Bieniemy, I was thinking like Eric Bieniemy. I wanted to win the game, and we pulled within eight of Nebraska in the fourth quarter. So that was pretty cool. I think it was 33-25, wow. And we were kicking off to Nebraska with Mike Rozier and Turner Gill, and just an unbelievable
Turner Gill,
number one team in the country. So now, you know, later I understood as an old guy that the 113 yards rushing against Nebraska was the most by a K-State player ever against Nebraska until the good players came along, like Michael Bishop or whatever. You know, but for a while I had a record, you know,
hey, man.
100 yards. But I went after the game going, we fumbled near the goal line, which cost us a touchdown. I threw probably two or three interceptions, three I'm going to bet, in the game. You know, I'm walking out the field going, I literally walked out the field saying, that was awful. I mean, come on. I know it's your first start, but I had head down after I shook the hands of the Nebraska players, head down, walking toward the ramp going, that's not good enough. We got to find a way to win. We were within 8 points, just totally bummed. And all these Nebraska fans, they used to be really, really nice in the old days when they won all the games. I mean, super nice. And they were in the end zones.
Fans in football.
Nebraska fans were all in folding chairs along the grass in the end zone. Do you remember the old K-State viewplane?
Yep.
They were all there, right? They turned the place red. It was a packed stadium.
Yep.
So when I walked up that ramp, they were there, like leaving, walking across the same sidewalk I was. They were patting me on the back. Great job, son. And I was going, why are they being so nice to me? I was the most surprised guy when the Kansas City Star, back in the day when you didn't have SIDs protecting you, I got home at lunchtime, and my home phone rang when I was in college. I lived in a house, you know, like apartment or whatever. I got a call, and it was from the Kansas City Star. It's like I was such buddies with the guys that I know, you know, later in life, now, whatever you want to say. Yeah, the guys who wrote for the Star called me and said, congratulations, you've just been named the Big 8 Player of the Week. And I go, I didn't even know there was one. Thank you. And they interviewed me. They interviewed me, and they said, hey, can I ask you some questions? I said, sure, I guess it's okay.
Hell,
we
yes.
never thought about there's no access to these athletes. You got to go through seven filters. The world's changed. They just call me up, and I'm going, really? So I'm ripping off quotes, just talking to them. And they used to come in the locker room after every practice. The media, the Topeka Capital Journal, covered college football like you can't believe. The Wichita Eagle did it. And even the Kansas City Star would have people in our locker room like we're Major League Baseball players or something. Every day after practice, they would come walking around and just chatting. So when I got into the media business at 25, only 2 years after I left college, it was so weird. I'm around these guys in the press box, but I really knew them.
Yeah.
Because they would just call you. If they needed to talk to you, they'd say, hey, gonna get some quotes. I go, sure. I'm not even sure who the sports information director was when I was in college. I have no idea. I just talked to whatever media. The media would show up. They'd be everywhere. And we just talked to them.
All I know is you got a dual-threat quarterback in there with
that's
you.
That's right, man.
Thank you, Katie. All right.
Hey, man.
You can run it, and you can throw it. Let's go.
But I can't kick now, it. I know I can't kick. Nate doesn't even like me. Jake's wondering, like, could I kick? No.
I bet you could. You could do the old toe. I bet you could kick an extra point.
No, I'm just saying, you can give me the goal kick, like the 99% chance you're going to. You're going
that's
to
irrelevant.
Score?
I bet you can.
I probably couldn't even make it.
You got an extra point in
I
you?
Once caught a pass in the Turkey Bowl from Stan Weber, and I did not. I have to confess that I did not know that I was catching a pass from Big 8 Player of the Week at the time.
See?
Because he ran for over 100 yards against Nebraska, which, by the way, is incredible. Anybody that ran for 100 yards against those Nebraska teams, like you said, back in those days, that's...
high praise.
Oh man, that's awesome.
My favorite pass in the first Turkey Bowl, when we didn't know what was going to happen, it was on TV, on radio, everything else. Jason Whitlock against Kevin Keatsman. I mean, it was a big deal. And when I threw his pass, Todd Lebo got in the game in the fourth quarter or whatever you called it, second half. And I wanted to make sure Todd got it, so we lined him up in the slot, and I just said, you know, go down 12 yards and turn around. And I knew I could look off the defenders enough, and I just stuck it on him. I mean, right in the chest. Boom! So he couldn't miss it. You know, put like the little cross on him, and it was awesome. I completed it. There's no way he can miss it. I threw it so hard right at his chest that all I could do, he could either catch it beautifully or smash it into his belly, but it was going to be caught. So I had a completion to Todd, which was so fun.
Let's see. We're talking football and K-State football. Let's talk about the Sunflower Showdown. Again, Mizzou, Kentucky's at 3 o'clock on SEC Network. But before then, at 11 a.m., you can check out the Sunflower Showdown. Jake, let's play a quick clip from each coach and then get Stan's thoughts and Nate's thoughts on the Sunflower Showdown, 11 a.m. in Manhattan. First, here's Chris Kleiman.
Right, Sunflower Showdown.
He was asked about KU losing Puka Williams, and Chris Kleiman said he knows they'll miss Williams, but he also talks about Velton Gardner, who is their leading rusher right now.
You're right. He's a leading rusher, and I think he's an exceptional football player. Great downhill runner, has the ability to make you miss, doesn't get brought down with arm tackles. Been impressed with him, and that's where, you know, I know that you take a good player out of the mix, but it's going to give him more opportunities, and he'll be a focal point of their offense, and we have to do a great job of trying to slow him down because he's a really talented player.
And here's Les Miles saying that you could tell a difference when you're facing a traditional rival.
There's a lot of energy when you take the field in a rivalry game. It's just I've been fortunate to be a part of some rivalries, and simply put, there's a higher level of energy, a group of guys that are committed, a lot of the player meetings, and our guys are looking forward to it. I'm sure that Chris is in that group is going to, they're going to be ready to play.
So the interesting thing here, and you heard Chris Kleiman talking about it a little bit, you've got K-State, who must now move forward without their star quarterback, and now Kansas must move forward without their star running back. And so those are two big storylines, obviously. But we've seen K-State win without Skylar Thompson. Let's just start with what Kansas will look like now without Puka Williams. Stan and Nate.
Well, first of all, I wanted to show Nate, because he can see this, that a football magazine that came out. I love these football magazines. But they came out, and Athlon's does a great job. And so when Stephen was speaking, it just reminded me, hey, I have that Athlon's book with me. I think I know what's on the cover. And what do we see there, Nate?
You see Skylar Thompson and Puka Williams.
Jeez.
Yep, Stephen has summarized this well. The two feature guys that people would expect to be talking about going into this game are not going to be available to play. And boy, I guess in 2020 with COVID-19, we are used to saying, don't expect things to be normal. But this is taking it to another level, because Skylar Thompson obviously got injured, unfortunately, is not available for the rest of the season. So now you go to Will Howard, a freshman, and then Kansas loses Puka Williams, the most explosive guy that they have on a team, right before the game. And they lost Khalil Herbert last year, who I was such a fan of, and I think I was the head of his fan club. I don't know if you guys remember last year, but we said, Puka's good, but watch out when Khalil Herbert comes in. He's just as good, and it seems like defense is maybe even let down a little bit. Maybe they're a little more worn out when he gets in the game. Maybe they're so told about watch number one, Puka Williams, your whole week. You know, there's a guy with a number one jersey, probably a red jersey, that you know where he is all the time, and suddenly he's not on the field. And I said, you know, I think Khalil Herbert may be better. Well, go look at your Virginia Tech highlights right now.
Yeah.
Go see what they're saying about Khalil Herbert at Virginia Tech. I heard David Pollard on ESPN saying he's a pro. I mean, he's a superstar. He said he's a superstar, and he's a pro. Why is that relevant? Well, Puka Williams isn't going to play for Kansas, but Velton Gardner has more rushing yards, has been a better player this year. Puka's dangerous, very dangerous. And the two of them on the field at the same time gives teams problems. Brent Dierman loves to bring them together on the field. So obviously Kansas is taking a step backward. You can't have those two guys on the field at the same time. But when you're just in that one back set and a shotgun, and you want to hand the ball off or throw a swing pass out to Velton Gardner, you actually are going to have a harder player to tackle. A guy who is playing with more energy is the better back. Right now, he's the better back than Puka Williams. Obviously, you'd rather have both in there, and Puka's dangerous. He went 92 yards on his last play on a touchdown kickoff return, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Kansas hadn't had a kickoff return for a touchdown in a while. So Puka Williams is very dangerous. But down after down, Velton Gardner, like Khalil Herbert, maybe better than Puka Williams. So just as right off Kansas's run game, I don't think it's correct. He may get worn down. You may have to go to a backup like Daniel Highshaw. He really hasn't done much this year, hasn't had to play. I don't know how good he is. But K-State fans, don't just assume it's easy. Velton Gardner is the leading rusher for the Jayhawks, not Puka Williams.
I think it's a really good point, and it actually, this is a bit of a tangent, and I just was thinking about this last night.
All right, let's go.
Well, I was thinking about, we've spent a lot of time this week, and we're going to get into it with Stan, talking about how, you know, the comments that a lot of the K-State players who grew up in this area said that they didn't get recruited by KU, and they were interested. They liked, a lot of them were KU fans, and they still had that chip on their shoulder, and you know how nuts that drives me as a KU alum, that would be the case. Some of that I wonder is how much of it is just when you fire your coach every other year. The last year of the David Beatty era, my guess is there wasn't a whole lot of recruiting going on with the assistant coaches because they all knew it was a lame duck season and they're out looking for other jobs. But I also do think it's just been a complete lack of focus. And I was thinking about, is it fair to criticize this regime for that? Because they do have two classes of almost exclusively high school kids coming in. I don't know. I have a theory, but I don't know. But one of the things I was thinking about too, Stan, was we're trying to figure out what do we judge Les Miles' career or time at KU on? How much can we know with what he inherited and what he's trying to build? And we've talked about how, for me, Mangino, yeah, he built something, but he also got the team competitive pretty quickly. They were really bad his first year, and then his second year they went to a bowl game and they got Bill Whittemore. But you know another thing they did, and this was what I was thinking about. They only had a couple of really talented guys on their roster their first year, and the guy that was really the guy was Charles Gordon. Remember him? He was a defensive back mostly, but what Mark Mangino did in those early years was figure out who their difference makers were, and we're going to find out as many ways as we possibly can to get them on the field to affect the game. So Charles Gordon made it to the NFL as a defensive back, but they put him on offense sometimes in little gadget plays. They had him return all the kicks. They found as many different ways to get him to affect the game as they could. And I look at Puka Williams, and I wonder if during the Mangino era, or maybe if he had played for a Bill Snyder or somebody in those early days, if they wouldn't have looked at him and said, okay, this kid's 5'10", 170 pounds. He's not making it to the NFL as a running back. I don't think there are many running backs in the NFL that are 5'10", 170. But what if we put him at defensive back, mixed him in on some packages on offense, had him return kicks like they did against West Virginia? Could he have become a bigger difference maker if you've got a guy like Velton Gardner or Khalil Herbert? And I don't know, maybe that's completely half-baked. Maybe he just doesn't have the skill set to do all those other things. But does that make, I just feel like I would, you know, when you're Kansas, you only have a couple guys like that are quote-unquote difference makers. And I just wonder if they could have done something more to maybe make him a bigger part of that. That's a complete tangent.
Well, there's a lot of things that Mark Mangino did to make Kansas good. We can go down a lot of different. And there's nothing wrong with what you said, but I would say the biggest thing holding Kansas back right now this season is just finding the quarterback and playing high-level quarterback. So if Bill Whittemore was starting tomorrow, the Jayhawks would be a tough out.
That's true.
So I think about finding that feisty quarterback. He gets lost in the, you know, when he played against Phillip Rivers.
Yeah.
And North Carolina State. Remember the bowl game?
100%.
That was, Bill Whittemore was, Chip Hillary is a quarterback I don't hear people talking about. Chip Hillary was a killer if you had to go against him. The guy knew how to win. Mm-hmm. He was tough as nails. Mm-hmm. Bill Whittemore was that guy. I mean, no one knows. They say Todd Reesing. You know, it was harder to be Bill Whittemore when Kansas was bad and trying to turn it around with the stories that you're telling. It doesn't mean Todd Reesing wasn't magical. You know, he and Chase Daniel, wow. When they went at it. But there's a lot of different things that Mark Mangino did. He did well. And these guys, I have a fact that I could say over the air, but I think Steven has begged me. I mean, he's begged me to tweet it and see what Nate's reaction is.
Yes. Tweet it out. Nate will respond.
It's a much better response by Nate if I tweeted this out. So I may have to borrow your guys' Twitter account since I don't tweet. And give him the facts on this. So I'll try to, you know, keep quiet about this and see what Nate's reaction is later. But there are other factors as well about who plays hard in this game and who cares about this game more. So,
well,
you want me to say it or you want me to tweet it?
No, I mean,
no, you say it. No, I love it.
Yeah.
Okay. Kansas will, on their roster, most of these kids will not be on a travel squad. Most of these kids will not be on a travel squad. But it matters for the whole team. A team's a team. There will be 27 players rolling out to practice today for the Jayhawks who came from the state of Kansas. There are 13 from Louisiana, but there's 27 players from Kansas. One of those guys is lucky enough to be a starter for the Jayhawks. One starter from the state of Kansas. They're really fired up, and they want to win this game because they know about a rivalry. They care about their team. Everybody wants to win. I don't want to discount that. But K-State has 61 players from Kansas, and they want to win. They grew up their whole life. Doesn't matter if they played for KU or K-State. They want to play in a game. They honor the game. They honor the rivalry, and they want to win. Now, we've heard a lot of people say, you know, a lot of the media coverage, like you're saying, Nate, is those kids wanted to go to Kansas. Well, of those 61 guys, not very many wanted to go to Kansas.
Right.
Okay, they
want
to play for the real football school. They want to play at K-State. So this week's idea was, why didn't KU recruit them? That's fair, because KU doesn't have a lot of kids from Kansas. But K-State has 10 starters who are from the state of Kansas.
Wow.
Plus, that's not counting the punter and the kicker, both from the state of Kansas. So this means something to, internally it means, not only do they care about football more at K-State and the fans and all that kind of stuff, and they got a good thing rolling, momentum's good. The fact is, look at the numbers. 67 players from Kansas versus 27. KU's up one from last year. K-State's up four. So you want to know about the Chris Kleiman factor after Bill Snyder?
There you go.
Four more kids this year, because he kind of inherited last year's roster in a sense. There are four more kids from Kansas on the roster this year. So he's investing into kids like Ross Elder, who played at Rockhurst. I'm not even counting him. He lived on the Missouri side, but he's Rockhurst. And that kid walked on and now is playing great at free safety. And you know the whole story. Now, Mangino's quarterbacks were good at times, but also the Canes and the guys that are killing people out on the field and playing hard were Kansas kids as well.
Yep.
So K-State's always believed that we can win with Kansas kids and others. And KU has generally believed we can win with others. There are a ton of guys from Louisiana. You know, four starters from Louisiana, one from Kansas on KU's team. Can you tweet that?
Thank you, Katie.
Can you tweet that for me?
We're going to tweet it out right now. Nate, go smoke a cigarette or something. You need to bounce back. We will be right back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The definition of a great quarterback to me is, one of the definition is, there's no one way to play him. You can't go pressure heavy. You can't just void yourself of pressure. You can't play all man. You can't play all zone. You got to mix it up, because the great quarterbacks are too good. And this quarterback is definitely great. He's got great weapons. They got a great offensive scheme. And they're really tough to beat. So there's no one way to play him, or people would have tried it. As you've seen the scores, nobody's kind of broken that code yet.
That was Denver Broncos head football coach Vic Fangio talking about Patrick Mahomes when he was asked if there was a best way to stop Mahomes. You've seen defenses change their approach several times in his brief career, Stan Weber. Tell me what you saw from the Buffalo Bills and how the Chiefs responded, and if you think the Broncos are going to try to do something similar.
Great question, but first I got to say, what a mismatch in coaching. Vic Fangio gave us that quote, and I sat here and said, I have no idea who that is.
Did the same thing.
I go, I thought we were talking
now
about college.
Know.
I thought we were talking about college, but he's not talking about the schools I'm thinking about. And it's not a Nebraska coach talking about Ohio State's quarterback. I think we're talking about the pros. It sounds like someone like Patrick Mahomes, but who is this speaking? It must be the defensive coordinator or some assistant somewhere around the country. And then you announce to me that it's the head coach of the Broncos, and I just start chuckling and going, wow, bad on me that I don't know his voice. But that is, I kind of follow the NFL and interested in this stuff, and I just go, I had no idea whose voice that was. So anyway, big advantage for the Chiefs in the coaching.
Big Red. Everybody recognizes Big Red.
Yeah. I had that same thought last week as I went to look at the matchups, and I looked at the Broncos and I looked at the Patriots. And I said, wow, what a mismatch here. Belichick versus Fangio. I'm going to load up on the Patriots. We saw how that worked out.
Yeah, so Denver's going to be harder to beat because that was a giant confidence builder. Just go back and look over the last 15 to 20 years. Not very many teams have walked out of New England Stadium and with a win. That's giant for the Broncos. The Broncos have stepped their game up The Raiders have become more dangerous because I think John Gruden's getting used to modern football. I think the team has some aspects that, you know, they're acquiring talent and they're getting a philosophy and a belief. So they're moving closer up the ladder of being a wild card team. They're not in the Chiefs' range, but division foes always match up better against each other. There's, you heard Drew Lock even talking about when you play a team over and over, you learn more about them. He's looking forward to that. So I think Denver's going to be a tough out. It's a tough time to play them because they were a workmanlike machine. It didn't have everything go right. Drew Lock had a couple of interceptions. They had to kick six field goals. I mean, it was not easy, yet they were the better team all day long. And oh, by the way, Cam Newton was back from COVID. New England has no excuses. They didn't practice completely normally, but that's a nice win for Denver. Now, let's go and look at what's happened on Monday when the Chiefs got moved to Monday and ended up going to Buffalo. Buffalo's defensive philosophy was to keep two safeties back. You can call it cover two. You can go man under. There's a lot of things. But basically, they had two safeties back rather than one coming down, you call it, and getting into the run game. Run fit responsibilities. When you run the ball, a safety has a run fit spot. It might be between a tight end and a tackle. Wherever it is, he's got to be up there to stop the run to give you a chance. When you have two safeties back, they're not going to be there in time. They're only going to be about 7 or 8 yards from the scrimmage when you go through the hole. Look at the run from Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You all know it. They even said, you could drive a truck through this hole, right?
Mm-hmm.
Off to the right. Everyone can see that in their mind who watches Chiefs football. And that safety was in a one-on-one game, like in your backyard when you're a little kid, with that safety. And because Helaire was already gaining yardage. He crossed the line of scrimmage, and that guy was still 6, 7, 10 yards away, right? And he couldn't touch him because he's not down to help in running game. If he would have been a safety down and you had one high, he would have been there right at the line of scrimmage. Clyde Edwards-Helaire probably would have faked him out and gained 4 yards. But when he could deal on him, suddenly he had a 29-yard run, right? So the Bills just decided, we're not going to let Tyreek Hill beat us over the top. I assume they thought the weather was iffy enough with it's kind of the worst weather to play quarterback. Just enough cold, just enough rain, but not rain and not completely cold. It's just that transition time of year. And they might have said, hey, I don't think the Chiefs will be able to make some passing plays. I'm sure they're not going to run the ball. Andy Reid will start calling passing plays here. And they stayed back. And they stayed back. And Troy Aikman, if you remember the broadcast, if you listened to the broadcast and you weren't listening to Mitch on the radio, he kept saying, the Bills are getting killed. They got to do something different. You remember him saying that a couple times? They got to do something different. They got to bring some pressure. They got to bring one of those safeties down. They've got to do something. They can't let the Chiefs just continue to run the football at them. But the Bills did not do it. They just said, not today. It's our best strategy to win, and it wasn't good enough. Other teams are not going to do that, Stephen. They're not going to do that. They're not going to sit back. Now, the Bills' pass rush is not that great. Their front's not as big and strong and can stop you. Denver brings a whole different animal. Fangio, as a head coach, I don't know his voice, but as a defensive coordinator, I know his work. And he's got some guys like Chubb who can get it done. There's a pride. There's a good defensive philosophy. And they're going to have to change it up. So you're not going to see the same thing sitting back and making the Chiefs beat you by running or throwing the ball underneath. They're going to change it up, try to make plays, and their defense is going to have to go win the game. They're not going to put the game on Drew Lock, and they're not going to try to say, we'll hold the Chiefs to 24. Can you score 27? They definitely aren't going to say, hey, we're going to give up 35. Can you score 38? They're not going to put that pressure on Drew Lock. They're going to say, we need some easy scores. We need a turnover. We need something good to happen. We need a blitz that gets a sack, forces a punt, gives you great field position. They need to win the game on defense. Fangio is more of a defensive coordinator than a head coach to me. So they're going to attack. They're not going to sit back. To answer your question, I don't think they're going to sit back like the Bills did and just say, we're keeping our safeties back and dare you to run. I think you're going to see a more diverse offense by the Chiefs because Denver's going to try to keep them off guard and do some things, and I think it's going to be a tough game. I really do. I didn't doubt the Chiefs are going to beat Buffalo ever, except for 1 second when they said there was a fumble.
Yeah.
And, you know, on TV, I couldn't see the fumble. I just saw the Bills jump up and start pointing. And if it were a fumble, I go, my gosh, the Chiefs are only up by 3, and the Bills get a little more. That's the only second. And as soon as I saw the replay, I go, nope, Chiefs are going to win this game. They're better than the Bills. Josh Allen's not good enough. Said it last week. He's just moving up as an improved quarterback, a good runner, not that great a passer. He's okay. He may be great someday, but he's not now. Denver will be harder to beat. Because when you go to New England and win, there's a confirmation within the team. And they want, because the Raiders beat the Chiefs, the Broncos have more belief. I think the Broncos go, why can't we follow. The example I gave is someone beats up the big kid on the block. Steven, I didn't fight, so you have to tell me about this. They say if there's a big kid on the block that no one wants to fight, but someone one day gets a shot in and beats that kid up, it's a lot easier for the next kid to go, I want a shot at it too. Maybe I'll do it. And he's not a big, bad animal. I think Denver's going to try to do what the Raiders did, come in with perseverance and say, if we can beat New England, why can't we beat the Chiefs? I think it'll be a tough game.
Okay, Stan, before we run out of time, so you think that Mizzou's, I'm just going to go, you think Mizzou beats Kentucky, or are you picking Kentucky?
No, I'm picking Kentucky, but I think it's really, there's no reason why, if you were not objective, if you're a Missouri fan, there's no reason why you shouldn't be excited about the chance to win. You could definitely win the game. It's more of a 55-45, but I respect how good Kentucky is on defense, what they did to Tennessee. I think Kentucky's the real deal. Not national championship level, but a really good SEC team.
Who wins the game between Iowa State and Oklahoma State?
I think Oklahoma State will, but I wonder just about one factor. Are they rusty? I mean, they have not played in a while. Okay, they played West Virginia in a tough little NFL game, right there ahead the whole time by 10 points. Controlled the game, they won. Then they played against Kansas, and KU didn't show up.
Right.
So they played for, a quarter and a half?
Yeah.
They took their foot off the pedal, did they?
Yes.
I mean, they just didn't try anymore. They tried not to win 100-0.
Yeah.
Because Oklahoma State's that good. They're good. They're the best team in the Big 12 right now because OU has two losses and Texas has two losses. But they didn't really play that much against Kansas. They weren't that mentally engaged. And then they had their game against Baylor canceled. They had a week off. They haven't played in forever. If you don't count the Kansas effort, I'm telling you, it's been like a month. So how sharp is Oklahoma State? But if they play their normal game, Stephen, they play good defense, like Iowa State. They play good offense, like Iowa State. But they're at home. Their coaching staff is really good. I think OSU is, they got two great running backs. Everyone talks about Chuba, but the backup might be better. Same type of story we said with KU. I think Oklahoma State wins a close game. But Iowa State's playing the most legitimate football they've played in the last 4 years. They are more dangerous to Oklahoma State than they've ever been. Because now it's not all about the hype and being ranked at the beginning of the year and everyone telling they're great and they didn't prove it. Remember, they went 7-5 last year, something like that, and then lost to Notre Dame. Lost three or four games in a row because they lost their bowl game, K-State at the end of season, Louisiana start. But right now, they're playing good ball. So this is really a big-time game. A little bit like Missouri against Kentucky, same level game, I think, in a lot of ways. But it's going to be more hyped because it's for the top of the conference. Those two teams are undefeated. And if K-State can win, K-State's going to be tied for first with the winner of that game.
That's going to be an exciting game to watch. I'm really looking forward to that. And finally, what's the score going to be between the Chiefs and the Broncos?
I'm going to say 30-17 Chiefs.
Jake, what's the number?
It's going to take a while to separate.
It was 9.5 yesterday. I haven't checked it today.
What's the total number,
that's a,
though?
That seems like a big number to me, man.
That's a big chunk, isn't it?
That is for an NFL game on the road.
46 is the total currently.
Oh, Stan just went over barely 30-17.
I think the Broncos are going to fight them, and it's going to be an NFL game worth watching for those around the country who are just watching the red zone and monitoring games. You guys do this where you go, oh, that game's a 20-point differential. Yeah. The Jets are done. You don't need to watch any, right? I mean, this game you're going to be watching, I think, in the fourth quarter going, hey, if Denver could just get one drive, if Drew Lock could drive him down the field here 80 yards, they tie this game. But before they do the tying score, I think the Chiefs will do the separating score. It might be with 3 minutes left in the game. So I think the Chiefs will finish with that kind of score, but I don't think that's indicative of how close the game will be. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Hey, Jake, by the way, did you see the early line on Chiefs-Jets already out there?
Whoa, no, I haven't.
I know we got a break. Everyone just get, if you haven't seen it, guess it.
25.
16.
I saw it, so I don't want to guess. I don't want to.
21.5.
What? That's an NFL line.
In the National Football League.
Unbelievable.
I don't know if I've ever seen a 20. I don't think I've ever seen that.
Huh. There have been a few of them. I saw the list, and it was It doesn't happen very often.
Not when I've been eligible.
Yeah. You've seen it. Maybe you just don't remember. Right, but I just wanted to throw that out there.
Stan, was that that probation 2 weeks you had?
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. I bounced back strong, Stan. I'm in the green.
Start, hey, Stephen, Adam Gase.
I'll be thinking about you tomorrow, Stephen, and you'll know at 9 o'clock on College Game Day with Danny Klinkski on me here on Sports Radio 810. But hey, this game's big for Missouri. I can't wait to watch that game after KU and K-State play to see that game, because this is a game you can win, and it'll mean a lot. And if you lose, it's not a disaster, because don't give me that, oh, they lost six straight times at Kentucky. This is a good team. Hmm. And Drinkwitz has never lost to Kentucky. Okay?
That's right. Kentucky can't beat
Basilak's never lost to Kentucky as the quarterback. I mean, Missouri can get by that and just go play the game, and it'll be such a big win if you back an LSU win up with a win over Kentucky. Don't discount it next week and go, eh, it's home.
No.
It's Kentucky. Go back and watch the tape tonight of Kentucky versus Tennessee if you're a Missouri fan, if you want to find how you're going to value the win tomorrow if you get it done. And if you lose, you're going to have respect. You're not going to say, we're a disaster. Can't believe we lost to Kentucky again. That's not the attitude you should have. Mark Stoops is really doing a good job.
I can't wait to watch Bazelak against that defense. That's Stan Weber. We'll have Gary Lezak up next on WHB.